This episode of The Grape Nation is brought to you by Vivino. Discover and buy wines wherever you are. Visit vivino.com/heritage to stock up.
Hi, I'm Moxie Rosenbloom. My dad, Harry Rosenbloom, hosts Feast Your Ears on Heritage Radio Network. Right now, HRN is having a summer membership drive. Becoming a member is so easy, and you'll help support shows like my dad's. You can sign up for a one-time donation or become a monthly sustaining member by visiting heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Let's keep food radio on the airwaves this summer.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup. This week, we're celebrating Pride. We speak to the bakers who created a custom wedding cake for Charlie Craig and David Mullins, the couple behind the Masterpiece Cake Shop Supreme Court case.
We felt that what happened to Charlie and David was an absolute injustice.
Kat Johnson addresses the controversy surrounding Anthony Porosky, Queer Eye's food and wine expert.
Many viewers thought these recipes were unsophisticated.
And finally, Hannah Forden speaks with nutrition educator Leah Kurtz about the relationship between veganism and queer identity.
It's an interesting way in which food can challenge invisible value systems even greater than sexuality does.
Listen to Meat and Three, that's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E, this week, and celebrate Pride with HRN. Available on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and your favorite listening apps.
Welcome to The Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guest is Jenny Guzio. We'll talk to Jenny about women and wine because it's June at The Grape Nation. We'll talk to her about Italian wines and a lot more. We'll taste an Etna Bianco from Sicily that Jenny brought in for our weekly wine sip. I'm your host, Sam Ben Ruby. Stay with us for The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. Jenny Guzio is the newly appointed Associate Director of Wine for Danny Meyer's Union Square Hospitality Group. Jenny is the Wine Director at Maialino, Marta, and Vine e Fritte, overseeing the wine program at the company's Italian eateries. Jenny has worked at some of the best restaurants in New York City, including Scarpetta, Del Posto, and Felidia. Jenny also spent a few years on and off in Sicily's Mount Etna, working hospitality and the harvest. And she brought in a Sicilian wine, which we'll drink later. Jenny, welcome. Thank you for coming on The Grape Nation and being part of our Women in Wine Month.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so let's tell the audience who you are. Give us a quick background on your journey in life and wine that got you to where you are, which is at Union Square, Associate Wine Director, overseeing three restaurants. When did the whole wine thing start?
Well, I started off in the hospitality industry at a very young age. It's probably as soon as I was old enough to work, I started working in restaurants. I grew up in rural New Jersey, so that meant at the start working in pizzerias and places in my hometown. And I grew up in a family that didn't drink wine, really.
Italian?
I know, an Italian-American family that didn't really drink that much wine. My grandfather was actually a pilot for TWA, and his route was from Newark to Rome. Mm. And he spent a lot of time in Italy and Europe. And so peripherally, there was that culture. But no one had a real strong affinity for wine. It was more so food
Interesting.
Growing up.
Interesting.
Yeah. But working in restaurants, I learned, obviously, a little bit about wine at an early age, but it really didn't start to a serious degree until I moved to New York in 2001.
What, but you went to Colorado for a little bit.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So you left rural New Jersey, if you can believe there's a rural part of New Jersey. You went out to Colorado. Any wine-related stuff there?
Zero.
Zero.
No, I went out to Colorado because I wanted to study anthropology, and so I went to college in Durango, which was in the Four Corners.
Perfect setup for wine.
And, you know, I always loved nature, so that was another reason that brought me to that place. It's a spectacularly beautiful part of the world, but no wine really going on there. And I just didn't find it to be a place where I was going to spend a lot of time. I knew after a short period that I was going to come back to New York or come back to the East Coast. And so I kind of found myself in this place where I wanted to do the polar opposite of nature and move to New York City. And at the time, I was still only 19. So
so that's 01, you said.
2001,
so
yeah.
What starts happening from then on?
Well, I did what was natural to me, which was to find a job in a restaurant. And I re-enrolled in school, but kept working in restaurants and found myself working in nicer and nicer, more serious restaurants that ultimately had wine programs. And at the time, I was simultaneously in a relationship with someone whose parents were very into wine, wine collectors. And very
much.
Is that
a major exposure?
It was the first major exposure because they were also very big diners. And so we lived in New York City, so they would come and visit us in New York and take us out to some of the best restaurants, and we would, you know, drink wine that I wish I remember the bottles that I drank.
Did they have a favorite? Was it Burgundy, Bordeaux?
They were actually very into Italian wine. We'd drink Brunello. They were into California wine also, but that was my first sort of.
Was it, oh, wow, like this stuff's great?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, I understood that it was great. And,
okay. And
I enjoyed the experience of tasting wine seriously with food and also the service of wine at some of these restaurants. And I realized then that I wanted to work in better restaurants because I was experiencing the service at better restaurants.
Mm. So first significant or major hospitality wine job was when and where?
My first wine job was at Scarpetta, which was
Scott
about,
Conant
yeah,
was there then?
That was in the fairly close to the beginning of the opening of that restaurant,
hot
so
spot.
Kind of the heyday,
yeah.
Very much a hot spot. And it was my first somm position. I had already taken courses at the American Sommelier Association and had already at that point decided that I was going to make wine my career. And I found a niche in Italian wine there that kind of fit naturally with my upbringing and with my love for travel. I had already traveled to Italy a number of times, and so it just became...
Right, and your boyfriend's parents then were into Italian and all.
Well,
that.
Yeah, this was a little after that.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. No, I meant, but that laid down
of
some
course.
Groundwork and all that.
Yeah.
So you're at Scarpetta how long?
I was there for several years,
mm-hmm.
Which is where I met George. Obviously, at that time, he was the wine director of Scarpetta, and it was sort of a two-man wine team. So it was him and I.
Now, George is somebody that you're seeing right now.
Still, yes.
So we'll make
So we're
that
talking match. About, yeah, full disclosure, we're talking about 8 years ago, but...
So you get out of Scarpetta because it's time to move on?
Actually, George and I had an opportunity to move to Sicily while we were working at Scarpetta.
That's when you went to Italy.
And so that was the first time that we went to Sicily to work.
What year?
2010, I believe.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you went to be with someone specific, right? Or did you meet that person there, Foti?
No, we went specifically to work for Salvo Foti.
Now explain who Salvo Foti is.
So Salvo Foti is an oenologist and an agronomist. He has worked all over Sicily, and he's really helped to shape, I think, the renaissance that we know today of Mount Etna. But he also has worked all across the island and helped a lot of producers that are considered some of the top producers today get their start.
So you work with him in wine, Harvest Winery, but you also do some hospitality there, work in restaurants?
Yeah, so he initially had wanted to open an osteria, so a place where people could have simple meals, a traditional Etnaean cuisine, and also taste the wines of Ivanieri, which was his consorcio, his group. So we were initially brought there because he was looking for people who spoke the language a little bit, but also spoke English and were passionate about Etna and the wines and had a service background. And he, I think, was drawn to us because we were both sommeliers.
Right. So you spend how much time? Does that pan out, the restaurant and everything?
It didn't pan out because we were unfortunately not able to get a work visa that would allow us to stay for the long term. So we did stay for a period of time, and then we actually came back to New York, worked in New York at Scarpetta again, and then went back again to Sicily to make another go of it.
Okay.
But did that happen? Ultimately did not. No.
So now you come back again after two times in Sicily.
So we came back, and while I was in Sicily, I had met someone who was connected to the Vitali Bastianich group at the time, Del Posto specifically, and he introduced me to Jeff Porter and suggested that I might be interested in a position at Del Posto.
What year was
that? This is maybe 2011.
And when did Del Posto 12. Open?
2008, I think.
Okay, so it's been around a few
years. Actually, maybe even earlier. Yeah.
Earlier. So you spend how much time there?
A few years.
A few years.
Again, a few years, yeah.
Don't tell me you left there to go to Sicily.
I did once.
You did? Okay. So that's a third time?
I did. At one point, I did ask that I could go back for a little while and maybe come back, maybe not, if they would be so...
gracious.
So kind to hold my position, and that ended up happening.
And you come back, you go back to Del Posto, you go somewhere else?
I went back to Del Posto, and I continued working there. It was a great time of my life, a great experience working there, especially.
Incredible restaurant.
Really shaped.
And then you finished off at one other place? Was it Felidia?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, same restaurant group.
Group, right. Well, that's Mario's. No, that's Joe's mom.
Mm-hmm. And Jeff asked me if I would be interested in running the wine program there. And so that's how
it happened. First time you ran the program?
Yeah.
Was it Felidia?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you did that for how long?
I did that for, again, about 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah. That was another incredible experience.
I can imagine.
A really historic restaurant and program that many people have gone through, many great professionals
their
have
alumni
gone through.
Is great, and it's been around a while.
Yeah, you know, incredible seller.
Yeah. All right, so get me to current. So eventually you leave there, and...
So I left there, and I knew that I just wanted the next thing that I did to really be something that I could do for the long term that was going to be the right fit. And so I really kind of took my time talking to people and interviewing, and I really wanted to work for Union Square Hospitality Group, and so I met John Reagan, and
still there,
and we started talking, and we had lots of conversations, and ultimately the opportunity at Maialino opened up, and that was kind of the right fit for me.
When was that?
That was in September of 2016.
Okay, so we're going on a couple of years when this fall comes.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll talk about their wine list, you know, in a few minutes in the restaurant and the other restaurants. So you spend some time there, and eventually you take on more responsibility.
Yeah, I've spent, I would say I'd spent almost the last 2 years I'm working to build the team there.
At Maialina.
Yeah. Obviously had a really incredible foundation in terms of a wine program. So I kind of made that my own in small ways and continued to grow that, and with the goal of really just making it an incredible place to come and drink Italian wine, whether you want to drink something that's a great value by the glass, or
right.
whether you want to drink, you know,
Soldera.
Barolo from the 50s, right. or Soldera, yeah. And the team has always been really very important to me. And I've found kind of like the perfect match of different individual personalities and strengths. And it's a really, really great team right now. And I love working with them.
Nice. And then when does the time come where you're asked to come into Marta?
That happened just a few months ago, maybe 5 or 6 months ago. I was ready, I think, to take on more challenges. And John approached me to ask me if this was something that I would be interested in, and it definitely was. And so we started working on it slowly and gradually and
nice.
Eased into it.
And I guess congrats are in order, because you took that position. You added Marta.
Mm-hmm.
And with Marta, across the way is a little Roman bar, Vini Fritte, serving Italian little snacks.
Mm-hmm.
And you were recently made the associate director of wine for Union Square Hospitality, which is impressive because, like you said, it's a company you wanted to work for, and the reason being, it's a great company. So mm-hmm. that's where you are now. So while I have you here, we're going to get into a lot of stuff, but I want to ask you about women in wine, because we do a June series. Do you think, and this includes you and what you observe, do women have better opportunities in wine now than, let's say, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, even 15 years ago, which pretty much covers when you got to New York, and, you know, to the present? Ever any issues? Ever any disadvantage?
For me personally, I've always been surrounded by and supported by men in my career who never treated me any differently and never held me back, but only really lifted me up and got me to the place that I am today. And I think that there are a lot of women that can say that as well. But that's because this is such a male-dominated industry for so long.
Right.
So, you know, I would love to say that I had many mentors along the way who were women, but that wasn't the case back then when I was growing up in wine. And so I hope that someday there's women, you know, that will say that about me, that they had a strong woman as a mentor who supported them. But for me,
right.
I was so lucky.
Well, that's going on now. So
right.
I mean, you make your imprint. I think two things. One's a comment, one's a question. I think Union Square Hospitality nurtures everybody, male mm-hmm. or female, and I think you're experiencing that. But even looking around outside of the company or friends, I mean, everything kind of feels okay right now, or?
I mean, I think that there's certainly more opportunity now, and you're seeing so many women in leadership roles, which is incredible. And
little by little, more and more.
Yeah, and I don't think that that was the case 10 years ago, for sure.
Right. There are more women now than then, and it kind of trickles down. You said something before, and I was curious. So along the way, there was not that one single woman role model or person in your career. You're always surrounded by guys. No influencer, no mentor.
No, right? I mean, I have always sort of been the lone woman on the team, and
never bothered you.
I never thought any differently about
it. That's great.
You know, because, like I said, the people who were mentoring me or who were the leaders in my company never made me feel that I couldn't do just as well as any of the men on the team.
Right. Now, I asked you this earlier. I want you to tell me about it. You know, I think you have an influence on where things go. One of the restaurants you oversee is Marta, which mm-hmm. is wood-fired food, mm-hmm. Roman pizzas and all of that. You have a somm crew of how many there?
We have four sommeliers.
And they are four?
Four women.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And also Kim Cavoras, who has just recently been promoted to be the wine director there.
Okay.
Who was the assistant beverage director at Maialino. So it's now a five-woman team.
Okay. So it's a five-woman. So now that you go up the ladder a little, you assign a wine director at Marta, which you had held that position at some point.
Right.
So, you know, it's a positive thing. You get into the business, and do you feel an obligation, or is it just a natural thing that these are the people?
I don't feel an obligation. I just feel like there's so many talented women coming whenever we
talented
post an
people
ad,
and they happen to be women.
And they happen to be women. And so it's, for me, it's always who's the best fit for the team and who has the most passion and who's excited. And
I think that's great.
Yeah.
All right. Your knowledge of Italian wines, I'm sure, is off the charts. So while I have you here, don't deny that. I want to tap into that. So let's talk about a few things quickly.
Sure.
Tell me about, and there's a lot, so you pick the few spots that are worth talking about. Tell me about some new, emerging, exciting wines and regions that we should be tasting and buying right now. And you see it all, so.
Sure.
What excites you? I would think Sicily would come up, but let's leave that for last.
Okay, we can leave Sicily for last. I think there's a lot happening in the Alto Piemonte, for starters.
So break that down for me. Piemonte is the part of Italy where Nebbiolo.
So northwestern Italy, obviously, yes, famous for Nebbiolo,
right,
in Barolo and Barbaresco, which have been at the forefront of fine wine for many, many decades at this point. But the Alto Piemonte, I think, is an area where people are looking to find the value counterpart to Barolo and Barbaresco. And I think, obviously, it's
is it Nebbiolo, or they're planting other grapes?
It's predominantly Nebbiolo. Yeah.
Give me a maker or two that's on your radar.
Producer that we've been so excited about for the last few years is Mauro Franchino.
M-A-U-R-O?
Mm-hmm.
Spell Franchino.
F-R-A-N-C-H-I-N-O.
Okay.
Not a new producer by any means. He has probably 50 vintages under his belt, but just one of these small guys that, you know,
wow,
hasn't really had any exposure. He's a farmer. He makes wine under his house.
Is it something you'll find mostly in restaurants, or you could find it at some stores, better stores?
You probably find it mostly in restaurants. Or some of the really fine high-end wine stores.
All right, so that's Franchino, Alto Piemonte. Give me another region.
Can we talk about Sicily? Because there's multiple regions within Sicily.
Yes.
So obviously Etna.
So explain what Etna is. Very famous area. Why?
So Etna is very famous because it's an active volcano.
Big news story these days.
An active volcano in the Mediterranean that has been growing grapes since antiquity at high elevation in the middle of the sea.
So you have two things. High elevation, three things. Volcanic soil.
Mm-hmm.
And that proximity to the sea,
mm-hmm,
which is salinity, breezes, mm-hmm, that coastal thing.
Yeah.
So what kind of wines in Etna should we be looking at?
Well, so Etna has obviously had, like I mentioned before, there's been a renaissance going on, and there's so many producers there now, probably triple the amount that there were when I was there even just 5 or 6 years
really?
Ago.
Wow.
Yes. And the exciting part about that is, one, the exposure that those producers are getting for their region as a whole, but the small producers that are making wine there in a very sort of traditional for Etna way are creating really stunning wines that I think are showing the potential that everyone knows is there.
Tell me two things. Tell me grape varietals, mm-hmm. and tell me a couple of producers.
Mm-hmm.
Red and white.
So grape varietals, the main variety is Nerello Mascalese.
That's the red?
That's the main red.
Give me a quick descriptor of what you'll get when you taste a Nerello Mascalese.
So the thing about it is that it has such a spectrum. It's really one of those varieties that I think is like a ghost, and it's a real terroir transmitter. So obviously there's so many different microclimates and vastly different areas of Etna that you could find a wine that is completely different, made from Nerello Mascalese, made in a very similar fashion from one zone that's only a mile down the road from another. But if I had to compare it to something, and I often do, I would say it can lie somewhere or anywhere on the spectrum between a Pinot Noir and Nebbiolo.
Okay.
So it could,
so there's some finesse to it.
Absolutely, definitely. But the
a
other
little lightness, Pinot and
be,
Barolo compared to a Super Tuscan or a Bordeaux.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. The one thing about Etna that's so interesting and incredible is the history and the age of the vineyards, and how most of the old vineyards don't have just Nerello Mascalese and Nerello Cappuccio planted in them, but they actually have large portions of many other varieties, five or six other predominant varieties.
They use them to blend?
They're all in the vineyards.
Okay.
So they would co-plant everything together. And so a lot of these vineyards have lots of Alicante in them. They have unknown varietals in them of ancient origin. And so depending on the area and depending on the farmer and what had been growing there for the last 150 years, you can have very, very different wines.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What about white?
So the white.
That's Etna Bianco?
Etna Bianco.
What's the grape?
Caraconte is the grape.
The predominant?
Predominant. It can grow on the north side of the mountain in smaller quantities amongst the red vines. And it really finds its home on the eastern side of Etna, southeastern side, specifically in and around a commune called Milo, which is where the Superiore designation comes in.
Right. We're going to taste the Milo.
Yeah,
at the
and
end
that's
of the
part of the volcano that's facing the sea. So you really see a lot of the influence.
The coastal influence.
Exactly.
And these are incredible quality wines of great value, right? We're not talking about...
I mean, you can find wines from Etna that range anywhere from $10 to $60. It
that's
really
great,
depends,
great,
but those are all great values.
Great
for
price
the,
point.
Yeah, the quality of the wines.
So you're up on Sicily. One last question about wines and regions. What are hyper-regional wines? Is Alto Piemonte a hyper-regional? What would you say a hyper-regional wine is?
Hyper-regional wines?
Is there a such term?
I've used that term before, I think.
What does it mean?
In Italy, it means the way that I would say it makes sense in Italy is that Italy has thousands of grape varieties, and each zone has its local variety, and some of them may be broad. Some of them may be a whole area that just plants Sangiovese, but there are places like Ruche, for example, the grape Ruche.
Spell it, R-U-C-H-E.
R-U-C-H-E. E. Yeah, which is in Piemonte. And I would call that a hyper-regional wine because mostly found in a town, an area, Monferrato.
Ruche
Castiglione,
worth tracking down?
Monferrato.
Is that a wine worth tracking down, Ruche?
100%, yeah.
Okay.
It's one of the great little unique...
Does Italy epitomize hyper-regionality?
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. That's what makes it such a fascinating country to represent in terms of wine, because we have so many different places that have their unique wines growing up alongside their unique food culture as well, and it's been that way since antiquity.
Right. All right, I think I know the answer to this. Of the king bees of Italian wine,
mm-hmm.
Barbaresco, Brunello, and Barolo,
mm-hmm.
you have to have a favorite, right? Do you? It's sort of a cage match between Sangiovese and Nebbiolo. Where are you at in that fight?
I think solely because of my own experience, I'm a little bit more Barolo Barbaresco.
Okay. Just from exposure and where you came from?
Yeah. Yeah, I've had a lot, and I think a lot of that is I can attribute to the fact that I've had a lot of Barolo and Barbaresco with significant amounts of age on it.
So that...
And the way that those wines age is incredible.
Is anyone a better food wine than the other? Is it perceived to be better, or they're all complementary?
I don't think you can say that, because it really just depends on what's the food. But I do find that Nebbiolo is a very, very versatile food wine. But there are examples of Sangiovese that are extremely light and elegant that can pair well with lots of different types of food as well.
Right, I agree with that. I want to ask you one more question, then we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about the wine programs. Then I want to ask you our wine list questions.
Sure.
And then we're going to taste some wine. How important to you, to your wine programs, are organic, biodynamic, natural wines? Is it important for you to carry them? Do you have a bunch?
Yes.
Do you feel you mix a few in? I mean, what's your position on that?
It's very important.
Why?
I think just as we as a culture become more and more aware of the food that we put into our bodies and the quality of the ingredients that we cook with, I think that we need to consider also the same thing for what we drink.
People forget that. I agree.
Grapes are the raw ingredient of wine. And if you don't have great grapes, then, you know.
Are your lists well represented?
I think that our lists highlight traditional, classic, and esoteric wines. And I think that you can find examples of natural and organic wines in all of those categories.
Nice. I thought you were going to just say the esoteric category.
No.
But no.
In all categories. You can drink a wine that's extraordinarily polished and beautiful, and it could be biodynamic and organic and natural.
Nice. We're talking to Jenny Guzio. Jenny is the Associate Director of Wine for Union Square Hospitality Group. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to ask Jenny a few more questions, subject her to our wine list, and taste a Sicilian wine. You're listening to The Grape Nation on Heritage Radio Network. No secret that I like being that person who always has some great wine on hand. When I know I've got a few bottles hanging around the kitchen, I feel like I'm ready for anything. If anything is just because I never know when friends will drop by unannounced, or because it's even just a Monday. I also hate that last minute run to the store. Wine was never meant to be bought in a hurry. It's funny how we have so much patience growing the grapes, aging the wine, only to feel pressured when you're staring at the shelf. I use Vivino to scan and keep track of my favorites. But lately, I've been stocking up through their web store. They have the best prices and largest online wine inventory, but can also give you personalized recommendations based on bottles you've liked in the past. And I use their premium service for unlimited free shipping. That's an extra bottle's worth of savings on every order. Plus, they have a 30-day free trial. I just grab a few at a time and save them from when the right moment rolls around. You never know when that'll be. Visit vivino.com/grapenation to stock up. All right, we're back. We're back with my guest, Jenny Guzzio. Jenny, Associate Wine Director at Union Square Hospitality. Jenny, let's talk about the wine programs you oversee, Maialino, Marta, and Vini Fritte. Mm-hmm. So let's start with Maialino. That's the largest, right?
Yeah.
Give me a quick description of what that list is.
That list, I think, or how we envision it, is that it's a comprehensive list of Italian wine from north to south that really sort of champions everyone from the little guy to the Biondi Santis.
Not and just the trophies.
The trophy wines, right, that everyone knows and loves as well.
Does it rival any Italian list in the city?
Yeah, I think it does.
Why would you say anything else?
What I think that makes me so excited to work there and to curate that list is that we are able to offer those wines at such incredible value. And I think that's what sets us apart.
That's always a great thing, to have the opportunity to try great wines that you don't see and pay a reasonable price.
Absolutely.
Just quickly, break down. It's predominantly, probably no surprise, a lot of Barolo, Barbaresco.
Yeah,
What's the breakdown?
I think there's a good proportion of it is Piemonte. Not just Barolo and Barbaresco, but also Alto Piemonte, as Lange. I mentioned, and also some of the other varieties that you find there, Barbera, Dolcetto, Ruque, as we mentioned, all the little guys. Sicily is obviously a big focus. Tuscany is a big focus.
It's got all the good stuff.
And then Champagne.
Now, for an Italian restaurant, and this may go back to your predecessors, it's an insane Champagne list, right?
Yeah. Insane. I mean,
pages, right?
Yeah, I think we have about 200 selections of champagne.
Why so much champagne? Wait, this was a question I was going to ask you later, but it fits in now.
Go ahead.
Is there a lot of champagne because champagne's been an in thing and a sommelier love, or is it complementary to the food and a great offering?
Well, there's a couple of facets to that question. Believe it or not, despite the popularity of champagne, probably in the last 5 or 6 years of grower champagne, specifically amongst industry or sommeliers, it has always been one of the most difficult wines to sell. Even at celebratory restaurants like Del Posto, right. I sold very little champagne. But I think something has happened in the last few years where it has gone beyond just the sommelier darling wine to something that guests are more open to trying and exploring. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that people across the city have made their champagne list very accessible in terms of price. And also because growers are on the market now that are making their champagnes very accessible, right, in terms of price. And so, you know, if you can now buy an incredible champagne for under $100,
it's a good wine to have at a meal.
Why not give it a try? And it, you know, it pairs well with the food. And then also, Italians love champagne. They're probably one of the biggest consumers of champagne, really, in the world. And you cannot go to a wine bar in Piemonte or, you know, somewhere in the Barolo region offered, and not find all of these incredible grower champagnes. They probably have access to more than we do.
All right. So that's a very fair answer. All right. Now let's talk about Marta, your other restaurant, which has a lot of thin crust Roman pizza and a lot of food prepared over wood mm-hmm. fires. Mm-hmm. So obviously the list is going to complement that.
Yeah.
What's going on with that list? One that's different than Maialino, obviously different food, but where are the strengths there? Do you have opportunities to do other things there?
I think that that wine list is all about fun. You know, it is a pizzeria. And I think we have a little bit more flexibility there to go off the beaten path and explore some of the, you know.
More than Maialino.
A little bit.
Right.
Yeah. You know, we don't need to do deep verticals of Barolo there, although we have them.
Right.
If someone's interested, the focus is more on what's fun and delicious and fresh. And
so give me an example of being fun that's delicious and fresh. Like, what's a good example of that?
You know, we sell lots of, like, fun rosés, Cerasuolo d'Abruzzo, Pella Verga from Piemonte, of course, Etna Rosso. I mean,
right.
There's lots of wine that goes really well with pizza. But,
good answer.
You know, also natural wines are a big thing there.
More natural there, Marta, than, right.
A little bit,
it
yeah.
It fits into the vibe and everything.
100%. And then we can't forget also Lazio, which is where Rome is home. So that's where our restaurants are centered in terms of our Italian restaurants.
Right,
and
right,
so
right.
We try to represent some of those varieties as well. Cesenese, which isn't on everyone's top 10 list.
No.
But there are some really great producers and some fun
give me
wines
one.
There. One that we focus on in Lazio specifically is Andrea Occhipinti, who's a great young producer.
Right. SP68 is one of our wines.
That's Ariana.
Ariana.
This is
Any
another Occhipinti.
Different? Not related.
Nah. This is in Lazio.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right.
He is up there.
Mm-hmm. Ariana's down south.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they are Roman trattorias. So
exactly.
You need to authenticate by having those wines. All right. And then next door to Marta, which is this massive, you know, beautiful, cool restaurant, is a little bar called Vine Fritte,
mm-hmm.
which is an expression of sitting at a bar and eating the fried snacks and, you know, having a list.
Yeah.
That list complements that food, and that is, what's the list there?
That list is very champagne heavy.
Because champagne goes great with
Fritti.
Fritti. As good as anything,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously champagne and fried food is a pairing for the ages. But it's not just champagne. There are Italian sparkling wines there as well. And also we're starting to work together, Kim and I, to build that list a little bit more to include wines beyond champagne and probably leaning a little bit more in that sort of fun, esoteric.
Right. So you're going to see some change and new entries there.
Yeah.
Great. So those are your wine lists at Jenny's Restaurants. Obviously very exciting, very interesting, very diverse. If you get down there, you're going to have some great people steer you towards some great opportunities, whether it's value or killers and all of that.
The funniest I know that, people.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to all the restaurants, and I've only experienced a good time. All right, Jenny, we're going to move along to our wine list. It's a bunch of questions that we ask our guests, buzz through them. And we're always curious about what the experts are drinking out there now. So the first question is, what are you drinking now? What are you trying, exploring, tasting? What's on the table, seasonal?
I'm drinking a lot of champagne.
Have you always been drinking a lot of champagne, or are you even drinking more now?
I'm drinking more than I ever have because I'm constantly looking for great value in champagne.
Give me
for our restaurants, and so I'm finding
best value champagne you've just had. Probably a small grower, or
the best value champagne, in my opinion, is a champagne based a producer based in Ambonnet, Benoit Marguet.
Marguet. Okay.
And he's making a wine, his entry-level wine, if you want to call it that, is called Shaman. He makes it in...
Shaman.
Mm-hmm. It also comes in rosé form. And
so,
those are incredible wines.
Great recommendation. All right, so you're drinking champagne. Do you have you developed, is it on your list, a favorite wine and food pairing?
Favorite wine and food pairing.
Something that reoccurs. I mean, it's not like every Thursday night you do your wine and food pairing, but is there something that...
Yeah. I know everyone always pairs champagne with something, but I actually
working.
Some people do standard stuff. Some people have thrown in some interesting stuff. So the door is open for you to throw anything out.
Working at Maialino, you know, we're famous for cacio e pepe.
Which is a very rich
quintessential
pasta,
Roman pasta.
Cheese and pepper. Spice and cheese.
And that is an incredible pairing with champagne.
First time ever. Good for you. I thought you were going to go with the oyster thing.
No.
Good for you. So that's cacio e pepe, the classic. Is that Roman? Cacio e pepe is a Roman dish. And champagne. Very good choice. All right. You've been in the city many, many years. Grew up in the area. Your favorite wine restaurant and or bar. Give me a couple. And I don't want you to be inclusive, exclusive. You're not leaving anyone out or favoring anyone. But who's doing it well? Where have you been to that you like to go to that knows what they're doing, has the selection? Anything come to mind?
Wine restaurant.
Or bar.
Or bar. I love to go to Racine. Whenever I can.
Racine's downtown. Pascaline Le Peltier is there now.
Yeah, I've always thought that they have had such a really thoughtful list and also excellent food in a casual environment, which is kind of what I'm always looking for.
Good choice. Give me one more.
I just recently went to this place here in Brooklyn called Have and Meyer. And I've only been there once, but I definitely want to go back.
Made an impression?
It made a huge impression. Because
wine-wise? The question is a wine-centric question.
All of it, yeah.
Okay.
It's an Italian restaurant whose focus is on slow food and slow wine.
Cool.
And they have, I think, like 100 selections of wine by the glass.
Wow.
Everything's by the glass, so it seems. And the food is very authentic. It's very, nice. Very authentically
Have
Italian.
And Meyer.
Yeah,
it's
and
a play
also
on
very
Have
casual.
Meyer.
Yeah.
Cool.
So check that out. It's
all
very
right.
Cool.
Jenny Guzio's favorite all-time wine. Could be one, could be a couple.
It's like something that was a memorable.
Yeah, not like the first time I tasted Romani Conti. I mean, what's just that wine that's memorable and favorite that you shouldn't struggle over the answer?
I find that is struggle. The most, so this maybe this falls under the Romani Conti-esque category, but the most memorable wine that I ever tasted was 1958 Monfortino. And not, I've had it.
The pergola? Or just the, that's Monfortine.
The 1958 Giacomo Conterno Monfortino.
Right.
Barolo. I've had it a few times, but the first time that I ever had it was probably one of the most emotional times that I ever tasted a wine, and it elicited a response that was...
Totally get it.
Almost
you know,
like tears.
Historic, age, you know, something you've been drinking and following.
Yeah.
That's a good one. All right, I think you'd be great at answering this last question. Give me your best wine... It's more of a retail than a restaurant question, so think retail pricing. Give me your best wine around $15-$20.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a red and a white. I always say my kids are in their mid-20s. They're starting to go to dinner parties. They don't want to bring crappy wine. They don't want to spend a lot of money. What should they buy for a white, for a red? You could do region, varietal, brand, whatever comes to mind.
I think... If you're going to a party, I think a white wine, if we could stick with Italy, I think a white wine from Liguria, Vermentino.
Love Vermentino, white wine.
Is such a versatile and crowd-pleasing white.
Good food that's wine.
That's great food wine and so refreshing.
And great, light. Great value.
Great value, and you can drink a lot of it.
Give me, I agree with you, is there a maker that you could throw out? Producer?
A couple of producers that are really great. One is called a producer called Punta Crena.
Spell?
PuntaCrena.
Okay.
Little higher end than that is one of the great producers in Liguria is called Ottaviano Lambruschi, which I highly recommend you seek out those wines if you haven't found them.
All right, so Vermentino.
Yeah.
I will. We post everything on our social media.
Awesome.
So we'll post your wine list answers, and we'll post our weekly wine sip. Give me a red. Value red, $15-$20.
So if we stay in that same region, actually,
okay.
There's a grape variety called Rosese.
Spell it.
R-O-S-S-E-S-E.
Okay. Rosese is the grape?
Yes. And I find it to be, if you like Beaujolais, if you like Cru Beaujolais, you will love this.
It's got that feel.
This variety.
Nice.
Yeah, so.
And it's in that price bracket?
There are producers that are in that price bracket. One of my favorite producers in that region is a producer, Macario Dringenberg.
Is that a person's name?
It's two people's names, last names.
It sounds like the rabbi of someone's temple.
But these wines are really, really stunning, and they're so food friendly, but also you can just drink them on their own.
Those are two great recommendations. We're going to post those.
So Liguria.
Liguria. That's why we brought you in here.
Awesome.
All right, our last segment, and we're going to wrap up in the next 5 minutes, is our weekly wine sip. Every week we taste a different wine on air. For our weekly wine sip this week, Jenny offered to bring in a wine. So Jenny, quickly tell me, first of all, pour yourself some more, and then quickly tell me what you brought in. What wine is this?
This is a Evinieri, so Salvo Fotis.
Salvo Fotis, the maker, the producer.
Mm-hmm. And the wine is called Vigna di Milo.
V-I-G-N-A-D-I?
D-I-M-I-L-O.
And Milo is that?
So Milo is the commune on the eastern side of Etna that is for the Superiore designation for Etna Bianco. And this wine is, I think, one of the most stunning examples of white wine in all of Italy.
Really?
I buy it every year as much as I possibly can, and it's never enough.
What are we talking retail?
This probably retails for about $30.
Great price point. So this is a killer wine for the price. It's an interesting wine.
It's an incredible wine.
Okay. I want to take a picture of the bottle. All right, so let's evaluate it. Color is a beautiful, you know, yellow, deep straw, right?
Straw, definitely.
All right. Nose. Tell me your nose descriptors.
I definitely think there's a little bit of like a bruised apple or slightly overripe apple.
Right.
And then a tinge of like an almond or...
Yeah.
A little bit of like a roast nut
character. All right, so let's go mouthfeel. To me, it's a medium-bodied wine. Not heavy, not thin. Agree?
It is a medium-bodied wine. It definitely has...
medium plus, actually.
It has a mouth-filling, oily texture to it.
Yeah, that gives it that...
Just very...
Beautiful mouthfeel.
Kind of a hallmark of Caraconte.
Palate. What do we get on the palate? The apple carryover?
It does, for sure. There's definitely a lot of acidity in the wine, and I think that the prevailing character is the salinity in the wine.
Mm, there's definitely that.
I mean, you are literally...
Pleasant.
Right next to the sea, and you're also in an area where when the volcano erupts, which is frequently, it's basically pelleting the vineyards with these tiny, tiny, almost like...
Volcanic
pebbles of volcanic stone.
Give me a couple of foods that pairs well with this.
Seafood.
Straight up. Shellfish,
definitely
fish.
Fried seafood, for
sure.
It
can go fried. Mm-hmm. It can go grilled, broiled white fish.
Yep.
And shellfish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then also pork, which is what everyone on Etna eats in terms of protein.
So great with pork. All right, so I'm going to ask you this question, but I know the answer. Do we like this wine? We love this wine.
I love this wine.
This is a special wine, so I thank you for bringing it in. All right, Jenny, we're going to wrap up. We've been talking to Jenny Guzio. If you have a question, suggestion, wine happening or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation. Follow us on Facebook at the Grape Nation. We'll post Jenny's wine list answers, and I'll post all the info on the weekly wine sip selection on our social media sites. Follow us on Instagram at SBenRuby, and always follow the hashtag The Grape Nation. And on Twitter, it's at BenRuby. Also subscribe to The Grape Nation podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Jenny, where can we find you on social media and all the other places?
My social media handle on Instagram is JGuizio.
G-U-I-Z-I-O. Okay.
Yeah.
And the restaurant.
My main channel. Right. And the restaurants, Maialino NYC, Marta Manhattan, Vini Fritti.
There you go. All right. I want to thank our guest, Jenny Guizio, for coming in. She dropped a lot of solid knowledge on us. And good luck and congrats to you at Union Square Hospitality. I want to thank our engineer, Vitor, and everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. We just kicked off our annual summer fun drive, so we need you, the listener, to help and donate to heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Do me a favor this week, just skip one bottle of wine and take that money and make a donation. We certainly can use your help, and we thank you for that. I'm Sam BenRuby, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.